The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Hey, Pastor Mike. Good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. It's an open line today, so your chance to have your say about whatever's on your mind. Could have been something that the Chief Constable was talking about yesterday. Could be the situation with, it is actually National Feel Sorry for the MV Manxman Day today. It's National Feel Sorry for MV Manxman Day today, but it is dry dock. I think it's day number 18 that Manxman's been in dry dock, and it's going to be a wee while yet. The end of September. The end of September before anything happens. Right, any thoughts on that? By all means, do get in touch. Text, email, call and WhatsApp. Let's get to the phones first. I think Mark's with us first. Hi, Mark.
Oh, that was quick, Andy.
Well, I'm quick off the mark, you see, today.
Oh, my word, I'm not going to comment on that. Right, listen, I was listening to the Chief Constable and what have you yesterday, and I owed you a massive apology. I mean, I always, whenever I pictured you, I always assumed that he was one of these, you know, conspiracy theorists that walked around with tin foil on his head because he was getting messages from outer space. But he came on yesterday, and he actually was extremely insightful, and so was Julian, to be honest, about the, if you like, the Islamification that could potentially happen over here.
In particular, what? Which aspect?
Well, if you cast your mind back, I mean, you've been over here long enough, and, you know, I was born here. I mean, I went back, Howard would probably be a good one to answer this, but I could go back 20 years and not see a single, you know, face covering of any description. I mean, you saw people with headscarves, because, you know, Hindus wear headscarves, Jewish women sometimes wear headscarves as well, but face coverings, no. And now we've come to the stage where there's a place in Finch Road, and it has regularly, so they claim, 400 worshippers. Now, where did they all come from? One day there's virtually nobody here of Islamic faith, and now there's well over 400.
Well, I'm sure there were always people who were Muslim in their faith. I mean, as you say, I think, is it a mosque in Finch Road?
No, it's a Muslim meeting place.
Right,
apparently,
okay.
There's been an application put in for, what's the old church on the corner of Allen Street, opposite the chip shop?
Oh, crikey, the one that's been empty for 30 years.
Yes, apparently there's an application being put in to turn that into a mosque. Whether that goes ahead or not, I don't know.
Right.
The thing I have a problem with, Andy, is where you look at places in Blackburn and Preston and what have you, you go down as far as Birmingham and Tower Hamlets in London, and these people do not assimilate. They live in their own little areas, and they abide by their own Sharia law rules. And if people like, you know, I mean, I'm Manx. This is a Judeo-Christian society. It's not an Islamic society or a Muslim society. And neither is Britain, but Britain is becoming a Muslim society in certain areas. There's, I mean, I'll give you the best example I can give you is early last year, I think it was, there was a football match between Aston Villa and Maccabi Tel Aviv, who were a Jewish team. And the local Muslim leaders got in touch with the police and basically said that any Jewish supporter that walked down the road to get to the Villa Park would be attacked. Now, that is the Muslim community telling the police that they are going to break the law, and the police turned round and banned the Jewish supporters. Now, how can that be allowed to happen in a modern society, that a specific religion can dictate how people live their lives when they're not even from that area or that country? And I'm just worried, as Julian and Julian alluded to yesterday, this could easily happen over here. We're small enough for it to happen.
Well, you still there, Mark?
I am.
Oh,
yes.
Well, but the thing is that, you know, being of the Islamic faith, being Muslim, it's not illegal.
No, it's not illegal. But if you look at some of the more, I'm trying to think of here, a more enlightened country, shall we say, like Denmark and Sweden and Switzerland and France, Belgium and Holland, they've suddenly decided enough's enough. And they've put fines now on people that have face coverings. So they've actually started now to turn their back on this particular religion because... You know, it's as Julian said yesterday, whenever you hear of a terrorist attack, 90% or 99% of the time, it has a Muslim person attached to it. I mean, that one in Germany the other day, he drove that car into a gay pride. He drove that car into a gay pride because he hated gay people. Now, gay people have got just as much right to live as he has, but he took it upon himself to say, no, they don't.
Don't you think, though, that, I mean, the Isle of Man is a... It's a small society, it's a collection of villagers, and mostly everybody knows everybody, or if they're not, they do know somebody who knows somebody. So that enforces a discipline on the Isle of Man, don't you think, Mark, in that because everybody knows everybody, I mean, you don't possibly think... I mean, do you think ghettos such as you accept, do you think they genuinely exist?
Yes, I've seen them. A friend of mine, we went to Luton to see a football match 6-7 years ago, and we took the wrong street to get to the Kenilworth Road. Yeah. And we were halfway down the street when we were surrounded by, I think it was about 7 or 8 Muslim men, who basically told us we had 30 seconds to get out or we would be stabbed.
Yeah, my point is, do you think anything like that would ever happen on the Isle of Man? Because, again, everybody knows everybody, and trying to detach yourself from society on the Isle of Man is well nigh impossible because everybody likes to know everything.
I don't think it happened over here, but the worry I have is that if you get a collective off them, getting enough off them, eventually one day one might run for a councillor or one might run for MHK. And then if they get in, they can start dictating how laws and rules and things like that can easily be manipulated and changed. I'm just, my biggest fear is in 20 years' time, all our young people will have left the island because they can't buy houses and they'll be replaced by, shall we say, immigrants.
You sound...
I mean, I'm not Islamophobic by any stretch of the imagination. I am just worried that these people do not assimilate with the rest of the population. They keep themselves to themselves, and that's my big worry.
Right, OK. All right. Mark, thanks for calling today. We appreciate
that. No problem,
mate.
You're
all right, good to hear from you. I just want to avail yourself of something about Summerland. A bid to overturn the Attorney General's decision not to order a fresh inquest into the deaths of 50 people who died in the Summerland fire has been rejected. So a bid to overturn the Attorney General's decision not to order a fresh inquest... So the bid to overturn it has been rejected. The First Deemster, Andrew Corlett, issued the judgment this morning after campaigners took the matter to the High Court. Last year, the Attorney General, Walter Wannenberg, found there was not enough evidence to justify a new inquest. The inquest ruled that those who died in the disaster in 1973 died as a result of misadventure. That was the verdict, misadventure. Now, Jackie Hallam lost her mum and best friend in the fire, while she herself suffered burns, and she spoke outside Douglas Courthouse following this morning's hearing.
We're grateful to the court for hearing our Dolian's claim challenging the Attorney General's decision to refuse our application of March 2025 for a fresh inquest. Whilst we are pleased to be here at all today to hear this ruling after a long delay, of course, we're naturally disappointed by the decision. However, we have no hesitation in seeking permission to appeal. The 53rd anniversary of the Summerland fire is in 3 days' time. My resolve, and that of other bereaved families, is unwavering. Our journey continues. Our focus is firmly on the steps ahead, and we will continue to seek to follow the proper channels as we look to achieve our goal of a fresh inquest for the victims of this epic tragedy. I would like to express heartfelt thanks to everyone who has sent personal messages in recent weeks. Your support has been deeply appreciated. Thank you.
Well, that was Jackie Hallam after this morning's decision by the First Deemster to reject that bid to overturn the Attorney General's decision. Thought we'd get that in. I want to go to Eddie with us now. Hi, Eddie.
Are you all right, Andy?
Yeah, fine. What's on your mind?
I was involved in the Summerland thing. I was a witness on quite a few of the things, both the containment of asbestos, where I've lost a few friends because of that. They have actually been compensated. At the hearing of everything, I can remember giving lots and lots of statements about the state of things that were going on there, and that lady was on it so right. There must be an inquest, because it is not a death by misadventure at all. It was mismanagement, and the building itself, everything about it. I mean, I actually, I've stated this in court. It's down on what record and everything. When I was working on that building, we actually called the manager of the site. It was a guy called Jerry Vernon. We also called Douglas Corporation building inspectors up, and we were saying that the oral glass was supposed to be fireproof. And there was people at the top, because it was cold, building a parapet wall at the top up by Onken Stadium. And they were burning it on a brazier, and it was absolutely roaring. We knew that from the minute go, and so did the authorities, so did Douglas Corporation. So, yes, I totally agree with her. There's got to be a further inquiry. Forget what Wannenberg says, whatever. He's going out, I believe, isn't he?
Yeah, but the First Deemster has just rejected their bid to overturn what Mr. Wannenberg said. So they objected to what the Attorney General said, and that objection has been rejected by the First Deemster. So in the High Court, it's been turned down.
Yeah, but no, the Deemster has said he doesn't agree what Wannenberg said, isn't it?
No. He is a bid to overturn Walter Wannenberg's decision not to order a fresh inquiry into the deaths has been rejected, right?
That don't make sense to me. He's saying not to have a further inquiry.
Right, okay.
Right. Is there going to be another inquiry or not? Because this lady is so right. We'll keep going till the end, until there is one, because these people who are making these silly decisions, why on one hand have they admitted the fault through the amount of asbestos that was sprayed over all the girders and everywhere in that place, and it killed people? Also, the oral glass, they knew that was inflammable. Flammable, I mean. They knew that. So why is it that they are saying no inquiry? Anyway, that's my opinion on that. But I've been listening the last few days, and I think you had Tony on yesterday, didn't you?
No, it was the Chief Constable on yesterday.
Oh, it was the day before, I think. Yeah, that's right. And Tony was on, and he was saying you couldn't write the script. Well, I felt like getting on that day because my elder brother is deceased now. He was the most decorated engineer in Britain. He was a marine mechanical electrical engineer with 13 letters after his name. And to his credit, he was in charge of putting the turbines in on the QE2, would you believe? And the point I wanted to make that day to get on was a dead simple one. Every ship, before it goes into service, does sea trials. And in the sea trials, excuse me, right from the minute go with the Ben, people have said there's vibration. I was on it right at the beginning. There was vibration at the rear end. Now, if it's done its sea trials, it would have had those vibrations at the same time. And lo and behold, what has the steam packet done? They've said, oh, get it into service as quick as you can. And that is my assumption of that. I agree with Tony. And then there was another guy on, Alec, was it? He said exactly the same. They're engineers, they know. But that boat should never have gone into service until everything was dead right on it. So Steam Packet are to blame. And I'm really annoyed anyway, because we were supposed to be going away on the 7th. That boat has been cancelled now. So it's cost me another just over 200 quid, because I've got to go a day earlier, and that's how much it's costing me in hotel bills. Yeah, it's just unbelievable what this government have done in the last 10 years. It's incredible.
Well, the thing is that the Steam Packet's an arm's length company, so they run it. They're answerable to Treasury, but they're an arm's length company, because just like Manx Care is arm's length, it was decided they didn't want politicians meddling in the day-to-day running of the Steam Packet. So that's why Mr. Thompson runs it. It's a company that runs it. It's arm's length, and its sole shareholder is the Treasury, and that's the difference. So government doesn't run it. They may be answerable to government where the finances are concerned, but no politician on a day-to-day basis, you know, runs the Steam Packet.
Well, I don't agree with this arm's length companies anyway. It should be clear and transparent what every company does. When I had my building company, the government and the inspectors and you name it, councillors, this, that and the other, they wanted to know if I was conducting my business legally and proper. So why shouldn't it be the same with all of them? I think it's just a daft idea. Hence, this government, again, they're the ones who've introduced this, arm's length companies. Absolutely ridiculous. And have you managed to get those two on yet on one of your shows, Cannon and Allinson, just to talk about wind turbines? Because they're both at turmoil, obviously. So let's hear what they've got to say on one of your programmes.
Well, I'm sure they'll be asked about it. Well, Dr. Allinson has spoken about it, and the fact that he was saying that we could be ringed with wind turbines in the future. But that might not be of our doing. They may be 12 miles out. And if they're more than 12 miles away from the Isle of Man, there's nothing we can do about it, Eddie.
Well, we can. We can object to it. It's as simple as that. We can object. Everybody can object. Right? Simple as that.
Okay. All right.
This company's going down in the next 2 years anyway, so let's hope they go earlier.
All right. Thanks for calling today. Well, what do you think? What do you think about that situation with Summerland? The bid to overturn the Attorney General's decision not to order a fresh inquest into the deaths of 50 people who died at Summerland has been rejected. So let's get all the double negatives out of the way then. The bid to overturn the Attorney General's decision not to order a fresh inquiry. So the bid to overturn it has been rejected. So Betty's on now. Hi, Betty.
Hi, Andy. First of all, I would like to make a shout out to the audiology clinic. They are trying their best to reduce the time that people have to wait for appointments. That's really good. And also, in particular to Tracy, who has helped me considerably yesterday. And she was very patient and thoughtful and considerate and helped a great deal. And also very nice and chatty.
Okay. What did you want to talk about?
That's one thing I wanted to talk about. And the other, I was listening to the first speaker, and I have to say that I have read considerably in different journals and books and everything, and it appears that in 20 years or more time, the population in Britain will be changed considerably by immigration, and that in the future, ethnic Britons will be in the minority in their own country.
Well, it depends what you mean by ethnic Britons. Remember, Britain, over the years, is a nation of immigrants. You can go back as far as the Vikings, the Angles, the Saxons, the Jutes, the Normans. You know, as for any ethnic Britons, they're way, way back, Betty.
Present day Britain, then, we might say.
Oh, right. Okay, so you mean what, within the past 200-300 years or so?
Yes. And we have had immigrants, true, but we haven't had tremendous numbers all at one time as we are having today. They have been able to assimilate into the rest of the population, but the present lot, there's too many of them, and they're not doing that, and that is a fact.
Okay, all right. Thanks for calling today, Betty.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, good to you. Let me get to, I think, Howard's with us now. Hi, Howard.
Hello, Andy. That was quick. I just heard part of the programme there earlier on because I was in another part of the house. But I heard somebody saying about immigration, etc. Now, you won't remember because I think you only come to the island in the 1990s, but this is going back to the 1960s, 70s. And it was when they first had the introduction of Chinese restaurants here on the island.
Right.
And it gradually built up until there was a deluge of Chinese restaurants opening up and a lot of Chinese families, etc., coming to the island. And we were then only a relatively small population, not like today. And the government here decided in their wisdom, that's it, we've got enough. And they did put a stop on Chinese people. Now, this is not racial anything. I'm not being bigoted, but this is what happened. And they turned around and said, enough's enough. No more Chinese restaurants and no more Chinese coming in to open up and to reside here.
Right.
We were becoming swamped. And why can't that principle, or why is it not possible that principle is still in being, to curtail the number of individuals coming to the island? Is that the last line I heard on that chap who was on, I don't know what it was, about how the local people are moving off the island and it's going to be an island of immigrants?
Well, that wasn't what's happening. He just thought that's what might happen in the future.
Yes, yeah. But this is the future. If that was the future for the Chinese family, that leveled itself out then. And we still have a large number of Chinese restaurants,
yeah,
other restaurants as well. But it was becoming a problem. And an equal problem now are people that are coming in from the UK and possibly people who come in as, we term as illegal immigrants into the UK and then just being allowed to wander. And why yesterday when you were talking to the chief constable, the ID situation arose. It was for and against on both sides. But we don't know who's coming in. And, you know, you've got so many people coming to the island now that are possibly come from other continents that could be detrimental to the safety of the island.
Well, the Chief Constable said that. The Chief Constable said that, Howard, and he was talking particularly about organised crime and people being sent to the Isle of Man at the behest,
yes,
of organised crime and put into, basically kidnapped, and in modern-day slavery. Now, whether or not they came from the Republic of Ireland, which is in the EU, whether they came from,
yep,
Northern Ireland, or whether they came from England, we don't actually know. And obviously the police are very involved in that at the moment. As you say, the complexion of the Isle of Man has changed. That's all there is to it. But remember, Howard, years and years ago, people used to be leaving the Isle of Man like lemmings. You know,
go back to
1960 when that census came out, and there were just over 40,000 people on the Isle of Man,
mm-hmm,
because there was no work out of the season. Everybody was going on winter work schemes.
That's one of the things where Summerhill made an appearance. That the that was a job that was put there. The land was given to the people of the island. Summerhill was built on a scheme for what they call workless people.
Yeah.
And that was in the 1950s. Eric Coward, who was then the park superintendent, was party of it. And but you have to be a bit selective, because I was just going to say, you've got two windows. You've got the EU, which is Southern Ireland. Southern Ireland is part of the EU, and they can move quite easily from the south of Ireland to the north of Ireland.
Yeah.
Then you have people coming into England, and this is the ones that are coming over, and they just put them into a house somewhere, and they've lost tens of thousands of them. Now, where are they gone? Where are they settled? And what are they doing?
But the thing is, Howard, remember, nobody can turn up to the Isle of Man and sign on the dole. You can't do it.
It doesn't matter what they sign on the dole.
So how are these people making a living then? If they're coming here and they're being put up by organised crime or whatever it is... As I say,
black economy.
But everybody on the Isle of Man, we all see things going on. As I said, the Isle of Man enforces a discipline on society because we all know somebody else. And if people turn up and we don't know who they are, bells start ringing, Howard.
I beg to differ on that one because we used to be everybody knows somebody else. Or you don't now. You can walk down Strand Street and you do not hear... hardly English voices, never mind anything else. There's just about every language spoken down there. And I'd be interested to know how many publications the government bring out now and how many languages they're printed in. Are we going to go down the same road as the UK, where everything is printed in half a dozen languages, a dozen languages, and the number of times you're hearing that an interpreter was required at a court, or an interpreter was required... And I've said to you before, I had to wait an hour after an appointment for the doctor, and she apologised because the person that was in with her was Russian, and they had to have an interpreter come up to the clinic before she could treat this particular person.
Right.
But this is swamping the island, and we're not a big island. We can't take too many of the people, so we have to have some control of our situation.
Right, okay.
If we don't, then we're going to be, as that person said, an island of immigrants. Now, I'm not being racist. We've always had people coming to the island. That's how we got our Timwild. The Vikings came to the island. But you've got to have some idea and some control of it. Otherwise, you just get trampled.
Okay. All right. Howard, I appreciate your call today. Thanks for talking to us.
Take care. Bye now.
28 minutes before one on Man in Line today.
Hello, this is Doug Farragher. In conjunction with Manx Radio, I'd like to invite you to join us and learn something about our native Gaelic tongue, the language of man.
Looking for somewhere special for lunch? For the past 10 years, Mrs. Yang's has been welcoming guests from across the Isle of Man with authentic Asian flavours, warm hospitality, and freshly prepared dishes every day. Whether you're catching up with friends, enjoying a business lunch, or treating the family, lunch is served Monday to Friday from noon until 2 p.m. Celebrate 10 years with Mrs. Yang's on North Quay Douglas, where great food brings people together. Reserve your table today.
For a wide range of wood-burning stoves and a complete installation service, visit The Snug in Ramsey. And we don't stop there. Kiln-dried firewood and full aftercare service, including chimney sweeps and maintenance. Call The Snug in Ramsey.
Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
For over 40 years, Hospice Isle of Man has provided free specialist palliative and end-of-life care for people of all ages across our island. We support patients and families at home, in the hospice, and the community when it matters most. Every donation helps keep our care free. Find out more, donate or get involved at hospice.org.im.
This advert is brought to you by Kell Properties.
From boxing
to badminton,
football
to fencing.
It's the Utmost Community Sports Fun Day, Saturday the 1st of August at Nobles Park.
From 12 noon to 4 p.m, there'll be a variety of sports and physical activities for you to take part in, whatever your age and ability.
Entrance is free for all the family, plus you could win a prize and a £250 voucher for your nominated school.
Just grab a challenge card from the Utmost Gazebo and complete 6 or more activity challenges to enter.
The Utmost Community Sports Fun Day, Saturday the 1st of August at Nobles Park, in collaboration with Douglas City Council's Fun Day and supported by Manx Radio.
This evening at 6:30, you can find out some of what's happening in the island's rich cultural life in Charlay.
We filmed with Isla in Brittany. We brought her over as part of a group of 10 international musicians from all the Celtic countries to play with Alan Stavell. She spoke and brought the word of the Isla Man with her to Brittany, and everyone listened and relished in that.
This project started developing back in September 2020, so it took 6 years to put all the people together.
That's this evening at 6:30 in Charlay.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
25 to 1. Stephen's been waiting patiently. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Andy, and good afternoon, listeners. I would just like to make a comment and say that it's been spoken about we must ensure that the steam packet is run at an arm's length, and that is very true. But it's the job of government to ensure that the grand strategic decisions are made in the benefit for the Isle of Man. And I'd just like to say that if we look at the... there was a select committee report, and I'm reading from the report of the on BBC News on the 26th of March by Rebecca Braid, I think the name is. The steam packet outlined plans to sell the Ben McCree in its last annual report. And the Timbrell Select Committee on the regulation of the government-owned Backherd steam packet heard that the company's strategy was to retain the MV Arrow as a backup vessel because the costs of the retaining the Ben McCree were twice as much. Chairman Lars Uglund said a year after delivering its report, this firm was still waiting for a reply on whether it could sell the vessel. And we go on to say that Finance Director Duncan Jude said the Ben McCree, being a passenger vessel, would become increasingly unreliable, while Managing Director Brian Thompson said it was simpler to operate the MV Arrow. Now, I seem to remember at this time one of the few MHKs who argued against this policy of getting rid of the Ben McCree was Chris Thomas. And I think Chris Thomas needs a pat on the back for his opposition to the plan to sell the Ben McCree and arguing and putting up a different strategy, which was to keep the Ben McCree. And thank goodness that that happened, because where would we be now if the Ben McCree had have been sold? So, 2 points. Yes, government should be retain the steam packet at arm's length, but the strategic sea services agreement is most important. Shouldn't be watered down. It should include all the T's crossed and I's dotted. And the grand strategy should be what's in the benefit of the island. And as I say, big thanks to Chris Thomas, who saw the grand strategy as more important than possibly what was good for the steam packet at the time.
Well, I can answer your question, by the way. Where would we be without the Ben McCree? We'd be up the creek without the Ben McCree, well, Stephen.
We certainly would. And this is why it's important that the grand strategies of what is best for the Isle of Man, not necessarily at the time for the steam packet, which has to operate in a more commercial sense, but it's up to the politicians to make sure that the agreement is there for the benefit of the island and not necessarily for the steam packet, as some people seem to think a watered down strategic sea services agreement might be beneficial. Well, the only people I could see it being beneficial to would have been the company itself. So, as I say, thank goodness Mr. Thomas did argue successfully and maybe made them pause to think what was the best. But I just go on to read that Mr. Thompson said that the decision had been made by a previous board of directors, that was to keep the Ben, and he had been left scratching his head as to why they proposed keeping the passenger ferry. So there was a proposal, and it seems to be that several of the big cheeses at the steam packet did want to get rid of the Ben McCree, but thank goodness the strategy and the strategic plans had a different idea.
Right. Okay. Stephen, we appreciate your call today. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
It's 21 minutes before one. I think, do you recall at the time when, didn't the Ben McCree go to a Western Island or the west coast of Scotland? Because they were looking at whether it was Caledonia McBrain or somebody was going to buy it. And it didn't fit, or they were onto a link span on one of the islands or the coast in the west of Scotland. And it either didn't fit or it was too big for it. So who knows? It could have been sold. And quite where would we have been? Interestingly, we've been looking outside from Douglas Head, and if you go to Max Radio's website, click onto the webcams, you can see the arrow's still there. I don't think the arrow turned any freight in the past few days or so. She looks very freshly painted, presumably like she got a lick of paint in Poland. But as yet, the arrow doesn't seem to be doing any work. Correct me if I'm wrong, do. Juan's on now. Hi, Juan.
Oh, just back from the supermarket getting some new tin foil, Andy. I've run out for hats. Run out. And a spaceship picked me up on the way back. Would you believe it? I see the arrow was in and out yesterday, just doing like trials.
Yeah, we've been watching this. She's been circling around. I don't know whether they've got a new master on board or whatever it is, but she's on the outside of the pier, then the inside of the pier, but I don't think has moved any freight yet.
Yeah, well, maybe the Ben's handling it all right at the moment. I know there's a backlog of some freight over there, but the UPS and stuff seems to be getting through pretty quick anyway.
Well,
but,
I got to mention, just forgive me for a moment, there was a guy who emailed in and said he got a load of toxic glue that's been waiting for ages on the steam packet over there. And, of course, I think they're only doing hazardous cargoes once a week, I think, at the moment. But I did notice yesterday morning the oxygen wagon came over. You know, that articulated lorry with the pressurised oxygen, that was over. So presumably that came over yesterday morning and the hazardous cargo and this guy's toxic glue from Heysham has found its way here. But that's one thing we tend to forget is the hazardous cargo crossings that happen normally once a week.
Once a week, yeah, that's right. And they have to limit the foot passengers on there to do that. I think it's limited down to about 50 people. Yeah. Just touching there, I've obviously triggered a little bit of a conversation this morning, but just touching what I mentioned with Russ Foster yesterday, very uplifting some of the stuff that Russ was saying. I do think there's a problem reaction solution in a lot of this stuff in the end game, but there you go. That'll be the tinfoil hat conspiracy coming out. But I mentioned yesterday, Andy, and I stand by that about full face coverings, and I think it's antisocial. I think that people don't want to assimilate properly with the country that they're coming to with this. And as I mentioned to Russ Foster about this, just the pure ethics of security. And if you're going to ask people, as he said, to reveal their face for the cameras, what staffing level is that going to take? And are you going to still make people actually remove them? So the easiest thing is you just put a ban on them. And I think it's an awkward situation. And as I've said before, we need politicians and we need chief executives with a set and actually make a decision and do this, because other countries are.
Well, the burqa is banned in Austria, in Belgium, Bulgaria, Denmark, France, Italy, Holland, Switzerland. They're the principal ones. And I think in France as well, they stopped, the south of France was stopping people bathing in what they call bikinis as well. So France has obviously made a decision.
And that's the thing, make a decision. Because in my view, and people need to actually go and live in Blackburn and Manchester and all these places. I've been there and I've lived there. And they need to go there and watch how this creeps in and watch how it takes over. And I get what you say, Andy, about, well, we won't get that here. I'm sure people in Padiham and Burnley and all these places fought the same 50 years ago. But it creeps in, it's mission creeping, it creeps in. And that's the unfortunate thing. You have to put some regulation in place to keep it in bay, because it's unfortunate that hardline Muslim and Islamic views want that. They don't care. They want that. And I'm not saying that we've got some nice Muslim people here and we've got some good people here that will integrate, but the hard line of it is, and it's in the Quran, it's written in the Hadiths, of what they want, and that will carry on. Yeah. And you know, they've got the same problem in South Africa, Andy. They have the same problem there. It's not just here that the problem is. You know, the immigration problem is massive, and I don't see why in this day and age that the borders of England cannot be manned by drones. And drones would be able to come in and see wherever them their boats are going to land. It doesn't take massive loads of people anymore. It takes people in control rooms, and you can identify that and send people out. To me, it doesn't make sense why these people are being let into the country and then put up and housed with English taxpayers' money. And of course, this is the problem, this is the knock-on problem that we've got because of our open borders. So it's created a problem for us. And I don't see the logic in this day and age when we've got fantastic drones that can be used, military use them, that can define where these people are coming in. So we do have to protect our borders. But as far as the face covering goes, I stand by that. And I hope some politician will bring it up and stand by it and bring this to Timbal now, before it goes too far. Once people have got a foothold in, you will not be able to move it. The time is now to do it when this new administration comes in, and make the move. Let's protect some of our culture.
Okay.
Cheers, Andy.
Good to hear from you. It's 14 minutes now before one.
At Bond Fabrics, we're not just a fabric shop. As well as curtains and upholstery and dress and costume fabrics, we've knitting and crocheting wools, made-to-measure curtain and blind service, plus poles and tracks. Visit Strand Street, Douglas, call 611856 or see bondfabrics.im.
One Architectural Design Company has particular expertise in achieving planning approval for a wide variety of projects, from landmark buildings to spectacular homes. Talk to the experts at Ellis Brown and get your project off the ground. For excellence in design, search Ellis Brown.
Now is your chance to recognise inspirational individuals and groups making a real difference on the Isle of Man with the Heroes of Man Awards, brought to you by a Little Piece of Hope charity. From quiet acts of kindness to outstanding community work, nominate your hero or heroes at alittlepieceofhope.com/nominations. That's alittlepieceofhope.com/nominations. Nominations close Sunday the 30th of August, with the award ceremony late January 2027. Details coming soon. This advert has been kindly supported by Cayman National Bank in the Isle of Man, rewarding relationships built on trust, and your nation's station, Manx Radio.
Carry on up Prospect Hill.
Wake up, Manxies, I think I got something to say now, please.
Let us entertain you with local performers delivering some very famous songs, but with the lyrics tweaked to cover the ups and downs of the election of members of the House of Keys. Laugh, join in, and of course dig deep into your pockets to support four good Manx charities: Hospice Isle of Man, Forget Me Not, Nassim's Manx Brain Tumour Charity, and Manx National Heritage. Join us at the Gaiety Theatre on the 3rd and 4th of September. This advert is sponsored by Manx Radio.
The countdown to the next Isle of Man general election is officially on. On Thursday, the 24th of September, you'll get to have your say on who you think should represent you in the House of Keys. And here at Manx Radio, we've got all the information you need to help you make your choice. We'll be playing out our full interviews with all the candidates each weekday from just before 11:30, and they'll also be available as podcasts shortly after broadcast, and you can watch them on our YouTube channel. And don't forget, for everything you need to know about the upcoming election, you can head to our dedicated website. Just go to manxradio.com to find out more.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
12 minutes now before one. Well, apparently that church at the beginning of Allen Street on Bucks Road was up for sale for £1 million. Is that true? Who's bought it? What's it called, the church at the end of Allen Street? Val's with us now. Hi, Val.
Hi, Andy. Just to let you know that my granddaughter was born Muslim.
Right.
Pretty westernised. Got searched every time she came over for 6 weeks holiday in the summer. Every time. So, where are you going? Where do your grandparents live? Who are they? Every time she used to wonder, her surname was Langley, so she was born mixed race.
So where did she where did she get searched? Whereabouts? Which port?
Here.
Oh,
Isle
Douglas.
Of Man.
Oh, Douglas.
Isle
right.
of Man.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. When she got off. But it was every time. So she wasn't wearing any Muslim clothes at
right.
all. Pretty less nice, you know, normal clothes. And she used to say, Grandma, why is it every time? I said, well, I don't know. They're just checking people.
Are you, do you make any do you make any sense of this debate, Val?
I don't know. I don't know. There should be something that can single them out, or some way of letting people in that are going to work hard and be a credit to the island.
Right.
But I honestly, there's so many of them, isn't there? You don't know who's coming in.
Well,
you
the trouble is, Val, that you know, it wasn't until, what was it, 1979, when the Ayatollah took over in Iran and what have you, everything got radicalised.
Yeah.
Before then, Muslims were, they weren't even a news item at all. Nobody cared
no.
about what was Muslim and what wasn't. I had one of my first bosses was a Muslim guy, and the sweetest guy you couldn't imagine. He was fantastic. And now, suddenly, and again, I got friends who are Muslims who say, you know, it's the radical ones. It's the radical ones. And
yeah.
don't you think we know who are the radical ones? So the problem is that, you know, the Islam has met a radical. There's a radical part of it, and politics has got involved. And that's what's happened. That's
yeah.
where we are.
Yeah, yeah. Sad world at the moment.
How is your granddaughter anyway?
She's great. She's great. She only came over as a child, as a youngster, every 6 weeks of the summer. She used to come over, and she got, as I say, she got searched every time. But there you go.
Okay.
Some
Val,
get searched.
We appreciate.
Get in.
We appreciate you calling today, Val. Thanks for being with us.
Okay. Bye now.
8 minutes before one, and Julian's on now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. Yeah, it's a difficult question. I know that, I don't know if you're familiar, that in America they have TSA pre-check. So if people are prepared to submit things like their, you know, fingerprints and stuff like that and go through a check beforehand, they get to go through a faster line. So I don't know, certain people are worried. Maybe that's another option, is a TSA pre-check. But I don't know. It's as Juan said before, let's hope this isn't a problem reaction solution kind of thing, you know, especially when you see like the population of Linton on Ouse, which is 600. The government are wanting to put 1200 immigrants into the old barracks
yeah.
right next to them, and there's literally like one spa and a GP. So they're kind of making us make this choice, whereas I personally wouldn't really want to restrict us, but you know, that's by the by. Just a quick one, a steam packet. I know they're talking about logistics and it was made in South Korea. My understanding is that Wärtsilä in Finland built the bridge to propeller solution, as they called it. So the propulsion system was done from a company that makes the stuff in Finland. I also noticed they also make all their own bearings and all the rest of it, and they even have a built-in DHL supply chain in their smart hub. There's a logistics operation, so they'll even, you know, you place an order with Wärtsilä in Vaasa on the west coast of Finland, and mm-hmm. They'll take it straight from Helsinki on a DHL flight right where you are. So I don't know, even if they're specially made, this is something that maybe the steam packet can come on and confirm. We've only got to get it from somewhere that's a 2-hour flight away. With its own built-in DHL logistics. And if they've got to build some bearings for us, perhaps we could get moved up to the queue or something. I don't know. It seems a long time to wait for that type of thing.
Well, I don't know. And again, at the back of my mind, when I heard the fact that it's going to be the end of September, whether or not it's the situation whereby it's going to be a lot long before, and of course it'll be good news when it does come back, maybe 3 weeks, 2 weeks ahead of schedule. So maybe the steam packet is what they call it. The worst case scenario is the end of September, and it may happen before then, which will be good news. But the problem is,
yeah.
And again, that situation with the lady in Ramsey, who's got her disabled daughter who may have to have an amputation, you know, no cabins on the Ben McCree. Ben McCree, cabin free. Now, somebody somewhere didn't think of that. Somebody somewhere didn't think that anybody going on the Ben would want a cabin. And you just wonder, how would you come to that decision? Why would you run a Ropax vessel like that without cabins? Somebody somewhere thought the public didn't deserve cabins.
Yeah, I just wonder, I mean, maybe the Medfly could fly at low level, you know, just to make sure there's no air pressure problems or anything, I don't know. Just quick, because I know you're short of time, if anyone wants to look, Manx Utilities has published today a request for information on a large industrial-scale battery storage facility. MUA document to look for is RF2026/05. Specification 10 megawatt output, 20 megawatt hour capacity. Given the island's remoteness and habit of going over budget, I just thought I'd just be quick just to give a quick idea if this is to do with Eerie Stain. I think that the wind farm is probably going to be at least 55 million. The cost of that battery system is currently around 15 million, which would be a 27% increase on the 40 million. I think interest charges 8 million, 12 to 15 year replacements of the batteries again. Lithium's up 100% since last year, so who knows what the batteries will cost. 8 million in interest charges. So the thing goes on, but I estimate it'll be well over 140 million by the time they finish with it.
For a battery?
Well, you've got battery, you've got inertia, you've got all that gubbins to do, you've got the roads to do, you've got port handling, you've got transport logistics. And also you've got curtailment because the power station can only go down to the minimum demand that we have already. So we could be 30% of the year that the power station's turned down anyway because the power station can't go any further lower.
Right.
So there's all kinds of overhead on this.
Okay, thanks, Julian.
Anyway, thanks, Andy. Cheers.
Good to hear from you. That's it. Thanks to Howie on the phone today. Back tomorrow with another Open Line. WINT.